call to order the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting, February 2022, 4:00 p.m. Notification of Open Meetings Act. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, revised statute 84-1407 through 84-14, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the director will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the director will discuss the item and take action, and will ask that the public not interrupt the director's this discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Here.
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 Aye. Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
Salute.
Nope, you got it.
Second.
And we got a second. Roll call.
Motion and a second. There's a lot of.
Okay.
Fowler and Jeff.
Thank you. Item number five.
I'm going to call the vote.
Oh, okay.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Kaczynski?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Aye. You're welcome. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice. We have that and will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation of groundwater monitoring joint funding agreement with USGS, Paul Woodard and Brenda Dinsmore, and Michaela Cherry, USGS.
All right. Good evening. Paul Woodward, groundwater management engineer. With USGS here tonight, we have Brent Hall and Michaela Cherry. And also, Brenda Densmore is available for any questions. So I'm just going to briefly touch on the main reasons that we're bringing the agreement, the joint funding agreement, to you. Our current one ends at the end of March. This new agreement will cover 4 years of sampling from this year till 2025. The full agreement goes into 2026, just like this one does. That helps us complete all the review of the sampling from the past year and get everything together. So we do have a presentation to kind of go through. Brent's going to kind of walk through the background of our last, how we completed the last set of sampling, and then Michaela's going to touch on what the new sampling protocol is going to kind of look like.
Hello, I'm Brent Hall with the USGS, as Paul said. Give you an overview, an introduction for our groundwater monitoring plan for the next 4 years. Thank you. So, brief overview of where we're going to go. I'll cover the kind of a broad level overview of the last 4 years of sampling. I know you guys get an annual update we gave last summer. But this will be kind of big picture numbers instead of the details of the background. Okay, so as you know, USGS and the NRD here have partnered on groundwater quality sampling for quite a while. It's been since 1992, so we've completed now 30 years of sampling together. The sampling is part of your groundwater management plan, so it's required from that, which is also in turn required from the state Title 118. And so we do all the sampling for that. In addition, we sample for nutrients and pesticides, some metals and other things of interest in the NRD. And in the past 4 years, we also completed a survey of sampling for contaminants of emerging concern, or CECs, at several wells, and have a report that will be released this spring, should be done. And so here's a map kind of what we've completed in the last 4 years. As a review, there's the four aquifer groups for the groundwater that we monitor. The Platte and Elkhorn alluvial aquifers are grouped together along the south and the western side. For example, there, the Missouri along the eastern, the upland that underlies most of the central part of the district, and the Dakota sandstone aquifer that's underneath most of the district as well. We sample from a combination of network wells and cluster wells. Cluster wells are owned by the NRD. They're grouped together. There's two or three at each location at different depths, so we can monitor sometimes different aquifers or different depths within the same aquifer. Network wells are privately owned. A lot of landowners, sometimes a business or a municipality as well. During the past year, the past agreement, we sampled 158 regular samples at 71 different sites. We repeat quite a few, especially with cluster wells. There are 55 network samples and 103 cluster well samples. And then at 17 sites, we did two rounds of CEC sampling as well. And then with the results, we provided all those results to, of course, the NRD at the end of this season when everything is approved and reviewed. We send letters to all of the landowners of the wells, all the network wells that we sampled, and other interested parties. It's also published online through our database, NWIS, and we submit it to the state for their database as well, the Groundwater Quality Clearinghouse. And so that's a kind of review of where we've been in the last 4 years. I think Paul has... And Michaela will be with you.
From the past 4 years, I just wanted to update where we were at. We'll do this every year, too, but with our groundwater management plan, of course, we still have two phase two areas, one south of Springfield and the other near Tecama. With our current sampling, that isn't changing much, although the numbers are going down a little bit in Tecama. So that's some good indication there. But realistically, we need to keep sampling a little bit more, not just in these areas, but overall, because the requirements for determining whether an area should be in a phase two is that we have samples over 50% of whatever that limit is. In this case, it's nitrates at 10 parts per million. But we have at least 50% of those samples showing us that amount over at least a three-year span of or three cycles of sampling. And since some of those reservoirs only get sampled in this four-year period, they only get sampled once. So we go to, like, the Missouri area, River area once out of the 4 years. So it's important to get quite a bit of data. Right now we're only getting about 20 samples in each one of those locations at each time. So I'll let Michaela then kind of go through, since that was the past, she's going to kind of go through the next step.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michaela Chair with USGS. I started back in July, and I'll be kind of taking over this project. I'm the new Amanda, if you remember her from previous proposals and presentations. So for the new plan, we're going to continue to sample the aquifers on a four-year rotation, so focusing on a different aquifer each year. And then we're going to be collecting 30 samples in each aquifer each year as opposed to the 20 samples that we were collecting before. So we're increasing our sampling in all of the aquifers. And then we're also going to be sampling all of the cluster wells every year. So in the past, we sampled some of them every year and some of them every other year, so we're now going to sample all of them every year so we can get that increased time frequency in terms of sampling. And so this will turn into 276 samples at 120 sites, so an increase from the previous 4 years, and this will allow us to sample locations that we haven't sampled at before so we can get a better spatial density in terms of sampling and also sample some of those wells more frequently. So we might catch areas that are improving or not improving, and we can deal with, or not, we as in me, but you guys have the information to deal with that either way, if things are getting better or getting worse. And so this is just an example. The green shows all of the wells that were sampled in the last 4 years. And then, as you can see, they don't quite, you know, hit every point throughout the entire NRD. And so I also plotted up the new wells that have been installed in the last 5 years. So we have more wells that we can sample. We have more wells that have been putting in every year. And so we have more people that we can contact to get some of that coverage that we're lacking right now. And so a lot of times we sample from the same locations because we have really good relationship with those landowners, but sometimes land gets sold or it gets transferred and we can't sample there anymore. So it's nice that we have these new wells that we have opportunities to sample at. And kind of just an example of wells that are maybe improving or not improving, and we have two examples where we have samples every 4 years in the Elkhorn aquifer, and so we can see one of the wells is kind of creeping up in terms of nitrate, but the other one's improving. So by having this increased sampling and increased frequency, we can kind of target areas of interest so we can either move things in or out of phases as needed. And now we have a lot of numbers for you. But the overall gist of this is that we're trying to keep the budget the same or very similar to the last four-year agreement with a little bit of inflation. And then with the increased sampling, that'll be increased costs that the USGS is paying for that part. So that's the overall gist of the budget. And then this is kind of the breakdown year by year of all of those numbers.
Go, Paul. So we did ask USGS to provide a little more detail on instead of just the gross numbers each year, but this is based on our fiscal year. So you see we're trying to be fairly consistent in that our amount, at least on the main years that we're doing the samplings, right at about that $157,000 total. The line there in blue, so this is total expenses based on both their personnel, but then see all the other factors that go into that. There's quite a bit of cost in terms of supplies to make this work. And there's also quite a bit that actually goes into laboratory fees. This would be something, this is very similar. This would be something that we'd have to go through even if, we were collecting the samples or we were working with somebody else to collect the samples. All these expenses would still be there. And in this case, what we're doing is we're working with USGS to get a part of this cost shared, which helps cover a portion of their costs. So hope that kind of clears up a little bit of that. I think we did do, for some of the questions asked, we did go through and break down 1 year of how much work that is. You can see, so this would be typical to what our consultants would normally do, which would be providing the number of hours for that particular year and based on the different scope items they're asked to do. So you can see those number of hours there. Right through there. And then the corresponding cost, this, of course, actually does match up with the total for that FY23 there. So you guys can look at that. That's in your the front of your packet. And I think that pretty much wraps up our presentation discussion. So if you guys do have any questions, we'd be happy to jump into those.
Thanks, Paul. Is there, we could have a motion on this item.
I move that we go with the staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Got a motion and a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Thompson?
Thank you for the clarification of the cost. First question, the indirect costs on that chart. For example, the fiscal year 23 that you highlighted. Project expenses, $119,000. Indirect cost, $76,000. What is that?
Yeah, pull those up. One more. There you go.
And director, did,
so,
did, yeah, the, you have a copy on the inside of your binder.
Yeah,
if you can,
yeah,
we do that, which I can.
Those are more of the overhead costs that USGS does incur, just like normal things for buildings, other vehicles, other administrative staff.
Can I ask someone from USGS, please?
Sure.
Because it's their stuff.
Yep. So, yeah, like Paul was – oh, sorry. Brenda Densmore with the USGS. So, like Paul was saying – the indirect costs are like overhead costs. So USGS administrative support folks, USGS leadership and the building. So, yep, just your normal overhead costs.
So the travel, vehicles, supplies, you're not considering that overhead?
No, those are all like line item expenses, yes.
Okay. Secondly, and I appreciate the breakdown on who's doing what, lead sampler, GS9, and the project manager. Are you one of the project managers?
So project managers would be like Brent and Michaela here.
Okay. And I appreciate the breakdown, how many hours, which we normally do. The problem I have at the hourly rate, can you explain to me how you came up with that?
Yeah, so that's just that does include all of our benefits and leave and our base pay for typical government GS-9.
Let's take the lead sampler, for example, GS-9. Which is a little different because I realize there are different steps involved in GeoScale.
Exactly, yep.
But the current GeoScale is $47,000 to $61,000 a year times 2080. That's $117,000 a year basic. Now, you're telling me that, at $56.50 an hour, that equates to $117,000 per year. Let's do the math.
GS9?
I'm looking here. $56.50 an hourly rate equates to 100 times, you know, the hour, 376 hours, whatever. Times 2080, which is the standard you use for, maybe it's 2087.
Yeah, 2000.
Number of work hours in a year,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
That equates to $117,000 in salary based on $56.50. Now, if I compare that to the GS9 scale of 47 to 61,000, you're telling me the benefits are double what you get paid.
No, so yeah, I mean that's benefits and leave and stuff all in the hourly rate, but yeah, GS9 is more of the, what did you throw out there, 40 to 60,000.
47 to 61.
Yeah.
As base salary, so.
Yep.
As a GS9, you're getting over twice your base salary and benefits. That's what you're telling me.
Well, I don't have a calculator. I don't know what the $53 per hour times 2,088 is. But, yeah, but basically that's the way our rates are calculated as far as any benefits and our base pay. And
I mean,
it's health insurance, and that's, like, one of the big things. You know, it's leave time. There's lots of other things that go into that base pay, but more than just what actually the employee gets. But.
Believe me, I understand that. And usually in the private sector, when we have these hourly rates in front of us, which, by the way, that this is less than what private sector, and Paul can attest to that. But we don't have the ability to look in the private sector books as well as you do as government books,
right?
Especially the GS scale. I just seriously question that hourly rate. I asked my fellow board members who are in the private sector in some degree or another, if a 100% markup on your base salary is appropriate for benefits. I used to, when I was more involved in the business, 25% was kind of a general rule. And I don't know. I need to be educated on what current. You're telling me it's 100%. So I'm just throwing that out for what it's worth.
Director?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering, were the rates calculated the same since 1992 when we were in this agreement with USGS, or how long have we been in agreement with USGS, and were those rates calculated the same in previous agreements?
Yeah, they would be calculated the same, but it really depends on what those health insurance costs are each year, and what GS level employees we have in our office to head out and do the sampling. So we probably, you know, had one of our hydrologists, Corey, who he does like the majority of your sampling, has done it for a long time, and so, you know, he probably, maybe in the last agreement, we kind of planned him as a GS7. Now he's advanced, you know, it's 4 or 5 years down the road. So now he's one of our GS9 samplers. But, you know, as our office kind of shifts and adjusts like any office does with, you know, we'll eventually have some newer folks being trained up, and then we'll probably tie them into future projects for you. But ultimately, it's been fairly similar over the years.
Okay. And then I was wanting maybe either you or Paul to refresh our memory, Title 118 from the state of Nebraska and what that calls for.
That is it has a lot of the Clean Water Act requirements for water quality in there and drinking water standards. Is that? No. Drinking water is different. Okay. So mostly for Clean Water Act standards then.
Okay. And this is mandated or required to we're in compliance?
Yeah. How they pass that along is it's they say an NRD has to have a groundwater management plan, and since the early 1990s, kind of when this started, that's when we were mandated to have a water quality, groundwater quality portion to our management plan.
Okay.
And if we didn't do that, the state would take over oversight of the groundwater quality.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Yep.
Council, just one other clarification for you, USG folks. I'm a retired federal employee, so I'm very familiar with the GS scale and the steps. So when someone moves from a 7 to 9, all that, so, and I thank every month for my retirement check out of the government. So I will still go on record that this is an exorbitant hourly rate. So that's all.
Okay. Director Jeff?
I have one more question. Do all, I didn't, there was a chart up there, I didn't catch it all, but do all the adjacent NRDs to the Papio enlist you for these same services?
No. Papio is the only NRD for which
you're the only one that does that?
Yeah.
We are the only one that basically hires you to do this?
Yes.
Do you happen to know, maybe Paul would know, do other NRDs do any sampling along the same line?
Oh, yeah, they're required to do similar amounts of sampling. They would have their own staff go collect the samples, but then obviously they can't analyze it, so they'd have other lab fees and things that go along with doing all that. And they, I guess generally if you look at what we're getting in terms of a lot of other things analyzed, those metals, some of those other ions and things, most NRDs aren't getting all of that data either. So there's a lot of tracking going on, but I would say our little bit of trade-off there is that they're getting more samples done, so they're spending their money maybe on more of a shotgun approach, and we're kind of looking at how do we get a good baseline of data. And some of the reason for those other parameters as we worked with USGS is they give you a better indication about what's going on, not just, hey, there's a problem, but what is going on with that problem.
I tend to agree with Director Thompson. It seems pretty expensive, and if others aren't even doing it, I wonder how they do it then. But can't you send it into a lab and ask for certain parameters to be tested?
Yeah, and you'll get charged for all the additional ones that you want to do. So,
all right, thank you.
Any other questions? Director?
I have a few questions. How many total samples are we talking about?
So I'd like to boil it down to the bottom line per sample so I know what we're looking at going forward.
It'll be 276 over the 4 years.
Okay. And if your agency was to do this type of work alone, would you be tasking a GS-9 or would it be a 3 or 4?
I mean, it depends on, like I was kind of saying, well, we don't really have 3s or 4s. We do get some 3 students in, but they never do the sampling alone. We need kind of a trained person out there to be able to run the pumps and run the equipment and things like that. So, yeah, we would not have a GS3 sampling this regardless of who asked us to sample.
You do this type of work now without the NRD? Do you do sampling of any other sites like this on your own?
Oh, yeah. We sample a lot of groundwater sites for lots of... Yeah, we do all for the city of Lincoln. We've been doing for years and years for them to monitor their well field.
And the price is comparative?
Yes.
Or do you have something to show us that it's comparative?
I could probably provide that, but I don't have off top of my head or on hand here. We do yearly agreements with them, and then their agreements include stream gauging, and we're starting to do some arsenic studies with them and things like that. So we got a kind of a wide variety of stuff in their package, but we can provide that if you would like it.
Maybe. We'll see you on Thursday. Paula, what's the final, or what are you gonna? How do you plan to deploy this information right away?
Deploying the information is done through, like we talked about, the USGS's national website. Everything gets published to that. It also gets published to our local state, what they call their clearinghouse. But then that makes it into an annual report on water quality. So our data is put in line with all the other district data from across the state, all the other NRD data.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item number 7, review and recommendation on the Eastern Nebraska Water Resources Assessment INRA Interlocal Agreement Amendment Number 7, Paul Woodard and Kathleen Cameron, INRA.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Good evening. We do have Katie Cameron here as well, so if you go to the other memo on this one, Bill. So this agreement as well does expire at the end of June, or from our last amendment does. This would be an amendment number 7 for the NRA, and again, this is a group of other NRDs, as well as the UNL Conservation Survey Division, which is kind of where Katie splits her time between working on this NRA project and the UNL Conservation Survey Division. That's a different memo altogether. There you go, that one. Yep. So this would just extend it for another 5-year period. You might think, well, we've got a lot of the work done, and we have done a lot, of course, with collecting all the airborne electromagnetic data and all those flight lines. We've actually are putting more work now into studying some of the other parameters, not just what is below ground, but what affects the amount of water beneath the ground and some of the quality aspects. So a WSF grant, or new WSF grant, was obtained by NRA. They'll be looking to map recharge areas. So again, we're utilizing the AM data we got, trying to map out where much sandier soils are, where high rates of recharge would be. And this both boils down to how does the water get back into the aquifer, and two, where are water quality areas of concern. So that's going to be ongoing over the next 3-year period. And we still haven't changed our cost contribution is the same for this amendment as well. So if you have any questions, Katie, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. We can have a motion on this item.
I'll motion staff recommendation.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Anyone in the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Hi. Thank you. Paul.
Thank you.
Item number 8, review and recommendation of the No Name Dyke Culvert Rehabilitation Professional Services Agreement with Fire Engineering, Martin Cleveland, and Lindy Rogers.
Evening. Thanks for going to the map, Bill. First of all, give you an idea where this project's at. It's in Western Douglas County. And Valley is up near the top of the map here. And so this is the Platte River, of course, on the west boundary. Union Dyke is actually north of the UP tracks. It goes up about 9.5 miles up to Fremont. No Name Dyke is about 2 miles long. It was built probably 1920s, roughly. Then the district rehabbed it in 1989, 1990. At that time, we replaced a couple of culverts. One was down this location, one was actually this location. And so we've discovered through the process of aging that things, in about 30 years, these pipes need to be rehabbed because the one down at 1947, whatever the number is, was replaced about a year ago. It actually wasn't replaced, but it was lined with a plastic liner, basically, a year ago. Now we have the same thing happening at the structure at 4765. Which is up here. Last summer we did an inspection, Bill Warren and I did an inspection of the dike, and then we always look at things like culverts and how they're doing, and you could tell right away there were some perforations in the culvert, so we had our survey crew actually TV'd the structure to see what was inside, what it looked like inside. We had Lindy take a look at it as well with FIRA to give us an opinion of what's happening here. And basically the pipe is near the end of its life, and so we have a the choice of either replacing the structure or rehabbing it. And typically we try to rehab things in place because then we can avoid cutting open the dike and having a potential flooding risk. So we had FIRE prepare a scope of services to do that design work effort to actually rehab this. And when you get into this, it's a lot of little different steps, but basically you have to do the evaluation of wetlands, for example. That's that effort, and the submittal to the Corps is about $10,000 worth of the cost. So a lot of little details, but overall, their effort from start to finish would be $64,250. That exceeds, of course, your board policy of $50,000. So there's two things going on here. One is there's a need for a contract approval, and then, of course, we need to waive the policy if you're going to go beyond $50,000 with approving a small contract, we call a small contract. And so in this motion that you have before you tonight is to waive the district policy 15.2, which says that you need to do an RFP, basically process, then also to accept the proposed professional services agreement with FIRA. And again, FIRA, we're suggesting you have them hired to do this because they did the structure down below there at 1947, about a year ago. They're very knowledgeable about this particular dike, and they've also did another 30 culverts in the Pappy Creek system the last couple of years. So very familiar with how to go about the process of trying to rehab a structure. So what we're envisioning this structure would happen, and the structures we'd probably line it with a plastic liner, a high-density polyethylene, and grout between it so you have a composite pipe. And so it'd be similar to the ones we did in the Big Papio in the last couple of years. It works real well. So that's kind of overview, and I've got Lindy's behind me here. I guess Lindy Rogers with FIRA and I can both answer any questions you've got about the project and also about what we're suggesting that you do tonight.
Okay, does she want to make any comments?
Want to add anything, Lindy?
So, Lindy Rogers, FIRA engineer. I don't have any comments to make other than what Mark said.
Okay, thank you very much. We could have a motion.
I'll move a staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone in the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Bonnie? Yes.
Yes.
Zabinski?
Yes.
Jefferson? Aye.
Thank you.
Please, my report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the time is 4:31 p.m., and we'll start the FEL subcommittee meeting. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84.1407 through 84.1414 is posted on the back of the wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear the staff proposals and recommendations, then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we will ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. And notification of the Open Meetings Act posting announcement. Said that. Quorum call, please.
Hi. Here.
Davidson?
Here.
Jefferson?
Here. Adoption of the agenda?
So moved.
Phil?
Yes, second.
Oh, second. I'm sorry. Left, huh?
Yeah. Oh.
Davidson?
Yes.
Conley?
Hi.
Jefferson?
Yes. And like we said, the proof of the publication of the meeting notice, item five. Item number six, review and recommendation of Washington County Rural Water Vehicle Equipment Repairs Maintenance. Justin Novak.
Good evening, directors. Just wanted to come back and talk to you a little bit more about the rural water systems, as we discussed in December. You know, one big thing that I mentioned last time with the rural water systems is we're basically a subsidiary of the NRD, so we have to manage our budgets accordingly. So one of our budgets, the Washington County Rural Water System, our vehicle maintenance budget has gone over, it's almost over 110% for the year, 6 months in. We have one vehicle, a 2013 Dodge Ram, that we might have held on to just a little too long. We put $3,800 in repairs alone just in that vehicle. Just got it back out of the shop today, and they told us we need about another $3,900 in repairs on top of that. So we're trying to hopefully limp that along. It was actually one of the vehicles that was approved to be traded in here this spring, and unfortunately we just got word that it's probably going to be a few more months before we're able to get rid of that truck. So here I am asking for an extension up to $20,000 for the vehicle maintenance repair budget in the Washington County Rural Water System. That only applies to that system, not Dakota County or Thurston County. So that's kind of the short gist of it. If anybody has any questions on anything.
All right. And do we have any? Well, first, we need a motion.
Second.
Any comments from the public, staff, directors?
Well, I'm getting off easier than Woody tonight, that's for sure.
Well, I was just wondering, I mean, would it be more, if I may, I'm the chair, cost effective to just allocate for a new vehicle?
Well, we've actually done so, and I think this, you know, this vehicle itself is at 170,000 miles right now. It's actually on the trade-in list once the vehicles show up. There's been a delay, obviously, with all the production issues that the automakers are having right now. We're anticipating now maybe a June delivery date, so we're hoping we can limp that along a little bit further. But as you know, once you get vehicles over 100, 150,000 miles, they start incurring a lot of repairs. This one needs a lot of suspension work, a new fuel pump, new windshield, new brakes all the way around. The transmission is starting to go out. The rear end is starting to fail. It's kind of a jalopy of the rural water system, really, is what it is. So unfortunately, we don't have an alternative at this point until the new vehicle shows up. We're just going to pray that it continues along. So that's why I went to $20,000, because I would hopefully that should cover any repairs that we may have to make before we get rid of it. But we just don't know when the new ones are going to show up. So.
Well, I was going to say, go ahead.
So best case scenario, the repair you're going to do next to $3,600 or $3,800, that may get us to the point.
Yeah, well, that's then, on top of the 3,800 we've already put in.
Yeah, so. But then the extra money is just in case there's something else happens before.
Correct.
We can get it.
Yeah, and we have another truck too, so we have two trucks on that system. One's a newer truck, and actually we had to put a fuel pump in that as well. So we have incurred a lot of extra expenses this year. Obviously, fuel costs have gone up. You know, other things that go up. But yeah, we think that $20,000 will get us there. Hopefully, we don't even come close to that. Hopefully we don't spend another dollar and this thing just continues to move along. So. But unfortunately, we've spent this much in repairs in 6 months as we're going to get in a trade-in on this truck. So, is what it is.
Okay. Director Sapinski.
Thank you, Director Bradley. So we're locked into the truck we've agreed to trade in on. If we can't find a truck elsewhere and move sooner?
I can't really answer that.
We have to go through the bidding process.
We've already ordered it.
If we were to cancel it, it's already been ordered.
There is a part of me that's concerned. I know one of the vehicles that we ordered.
They haven't delivered, though, so.
Yeah. One of the vehicles we ordered, the Grand Cherokee, that one got canceled. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen with these trucks. You know, just from what I see on lots, they gave us a very good price with ordering this truck, especially with some of the things that we requested, you know, with the longer box and the motors and stuff. But ideally, yes, this thing would have been gone usually about this time. Usually February is kind of when it's always been a trade-in for the vehicles, but it's getting, you know, pushed back to about June delivery now. So I don't know what the best answer is, if trading it in or trying to find something on a lot is a better deal. I would hate to put us in a situation, though, we've already committed to an order, and we go and purchase something off a lot, and then we're kind of stuck with both trucks. You know, and maybe that's something I can discuss with John after the meeting.
Okay.
What the best option is. But
thanks, Justin.
No problem.
I guess, yeah, not the only government entity facing this. I mean, you know, USPS, you know, and their fleet of electric vehicles, and a lot of go back and forth on that. Well, with that, let's, any more questions? Call the vote.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Director.
Item number 7, review and recommendation of King Lake land donation, Lori Laster.
Good evening.
Good evening, Lori.
Bill, could you go to the map, please? So if you remember, we had a public hearing a couple of months ago. A gentleman who owns 2 lots in King Lake has approached us to donate that property. He really, it's kind of an emotional thing for him. He does not want it to see it in the hands of developers, and he would much rather it be put to use in some form of natural conservation work, if possible. And so today we have before you approval of the agreement to accept ownership of those 2 lots. No money would be transferred between us and Mr. Mulford, and so the only cost would be the recording documents. We do own several lots in King Lake. As you know, we have an active buyout program in that area, and so we do have some that we bought just actually, we have several properties right in that immediate area, so maintenance shouldn't be an issue as far as, you know, going out of our way to maintain anything on those lots. And with that, I can answer any of your questions.
All right. I think we need a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion. Any questions or comments from the public? Staff? Directors? Director Thompson.
Laurie, you mentioned the other properties. I know we've got a smattering. Maybe on Thursday, could you throw a map up to see how many squares that we own, or rectangles, or circles, whatever?
Yes.
So obviously the issue is maintenance of this. I know Director Teaser has got his issue, his comments, but he's not here. But for perspective of maintaining the other properties, there's one more. I think it would be beneficial for the directors to see what we do own now, or would own if this is approved.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Director Jack?
Maybe you don't know the answers. Maybe Director Teaser would, but what do we do? We mow it, obviously. Do we seed it into some native prairie grass or anything, or do we just let it grow wild and mow it once in a while?
This lot, I believe, is already in grass, so we probably wouldn't disturb it. When we buy them and if they have a structure, we do have a seed mix that we plant and mow.
We do that ourselves, right? Or is that
we do
out?
on a certain schedule. There are some lots that adjacent to people who still live out there, and they have decided to mow more frequently than what we do. So that's kind of been an issue. It's nice that they do that, but it also causes a little bit of heartburn between neighbors sometimes. So we're trying to work with them to get some of this stuff figured out.
Okay. I guess my comment is you had mentioned, well, the current owner, and I'm all for it, but, you know, didn't want any developers to get a hold of it. I mean, is it a no-developed zone?
So the way the ordinance is written, no new construction of a building for human habitation. So nobody could build a house out there. Mm. But there's nothing saying that he couldn't pull an RV in there, or someone could not pull an RV in there. And what we find in a lot of these cases is that somebody pulls in an RV, and then they build a deck on the RV, and even though it's supposed to be removed. So there is limited development potential there, but it's not completely zero.
I see. Thank you, Lori. Any further questions? Seeing none, roll call. Or,
yes.
Jefferson?
Yes.
And item number 8, review and recommendation of land acquisition for dam site number 12. This may be executive session if needed.
I recommend the board, if something goes into executive session, discuss land acquisition.
You go into executive session, discuss land acquisition.
A vote on that? To go? No? Yes, yes. Go into executive session.
Tommy?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. All right, folks, we are going in.
Yes, motion by
Director Conley, the second by Director Davidson to come out of executive session.
Yes.
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 Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes.
Now you've got to read the.
All right. Well, further discussion, we see what's up there on the board. And we have a recommendation. General manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement providing for the purchase by the district from SID number 609, tract 9, for the dam site 12 project for the purchase price of $1,446,144. Subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager in approval as to form by district legal counsel. So, and we need a motion on
so
this.
So moved.
Second.
Call the vote.
Davidson?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Chairperson? Yes.
And with that, we are adjourned.